Hello and welcome, dear listener. You're about to step into a world of mystery where secrets lie buried deep and strange events defy logic. Here's the latest episode. To make the ride even cozier, dim the lights, pour yourself a drink, grab your favorite snack, and settle in. The journey is about to begin, so listen closely. John thought he had escaped the corridors of grief when he left the city behind. His new residence is an old building that has mysteries of its own. He came here looking for silence, but the stillness of this place made him feel uneasy instead. John's sanity is tested when he meets an uninvited guest, a boy who never utters a single word, but is always watching him. Let's hear his story.
Last week, I had to hear the raw sobs at a funeral I still couldn't believe had been mine to attend. After my wife died, I left the city. It was my way of getting a break from the sterile screams of an intensive care unit and the colleagues who constantly regard me with cautious pity. The pain of losing her made me crave silence and isolation. I just want walls that swallow sound and quiet corridors. On Monday, I went for apartment hunting and found a building far away from the city center. It was old and narrow, with cracked plaster that flaked like shedding skin. Nevertheless, it had one redeeming quality. It was cheap. When I moved into apartment 3B, the landlord made no promises. "Old building. Doesn't get much foot traffic," he'd said with a shrug. The man wasn't lying. The wallpaper peeled like skin after a sunburn. The radiator coughed more than it warmed. And at night the stairwell smelled faintly of mildew, mixed with something metallic that I couldn't quite name. But I didn't care. It was an anonymous, an almost empty place to fade into. I want to disappear in the void. There wasn't much of me left to hold on to. After returning from a walk, I saw a boy at the stairwell. It was already quite late, close to midnight. I told the child to go home, reminding him that his parents are probably worried about his absence, but he didn't respond. The boy looked about 9 or 10 years old, with dark hair and pale skin. He was quietly sitting on the landing, between floors, mine and the upper floor. The silence thickened, pressing against my ears. His presence made me feel uneasy. Then, out of nowhere, I felt a faint chill breathing down my neck. I straightened quickly, retreating toward my unit. Inside my apartment, I told myself the boy was shy or frightened. I was a stranger after all, a grown man asking questions in a place that wasn't exactly friendly. But I wasn't satisfied with my own explanation, so I pressed my eye to the peephole. He was gone. The stairwell was empty again, and the air felt colder. I didn't sleep well that night. The next morning, I asked Mrs. Delgado across the hall, the person who has been living here the longest, if she knew any children in the building. The elderly woman said, "No, not anymore. This place is too drafty for families. Only old ones like me, or new ones like you." Then she looked at me thoughtfully, and I could almost sense the pity in her eyes. Mrs. Delgado must have heard my story and is weighing whether grief has finally pushed me over the edge, and I couldn't argue with that. The boy appeared again on the following night, and the night after. Always the same spot, with the same expression. Despite the feeling of unease, seeing him became almost a routine. Every day, I would climb the stairs, and expect to see that no-name boy who never utters a single word from his mouth. Sometimes his eyes would shift slightly, following me. As time passed by, I got to know a bit more about my neighbors. For instance, Eric, the guy who lives right next to me, is a schoolteacher. Eric was about my age, polite. Although he often greets with a smile, his eyes never show any emotion. His wife, Monica, was a quiet woman. I don't think I ever heard her real voice, just a faint whisper, maybe. Just like Mrs. Delgado, Eric and his wife have been living here for a while. So, I casually asked him, "Have you ever seen a boy living in this building?" The schoolteacher's body stiffened. "There are no kids here. I like quiet. Children make noise. They stick their nose where it doesn't belong." I got the message. This man doesn't like kids. That same week, I ran into Monica again. She passed by me in the stairwell as I descended toward the laundry room. Her sleeve was slipped back, revealing a faint bluish mark on her wrist. She caught me staring and quickly tugged the fabric down. "A few nights ago, I saw a boy about 10 years old, dark hair, do you?" Monica's face became pale, and she quickly grabbed her laundry basket. Without a word, she hurried past me, nearly stumbling over herself to reach the door. The mystery around the no-name boy is making me uncomfortable. I can almost feel the heavy silence that surrounds me, weighing down on me. It's my fourth month living here, and I'm beginning to feel that these walls are charged with secrets. Due to the absence of answers, I found myself carefully observing the cracked plaster, hoping to find clues, but there was nothing. Every now and then, I would still see the boy in the stairwell. However, there was a disturbing break in the pattern. He looked more frantic than usual. Where once he sat still, now the boy would rock, pressing his hands over his ears. His mouth would part and close, as if screaming in his silence. The boy looks scared. His shoulders are trembling in the dim light. I wanted to help him. But how do you help a child who won't talk? One night, a muffled argument wakes me up. I think it's coming from my next-door neighbor, Eric. I hear him shouting. There is a lot of rage in his words. Monica is also saying something, but her voice is much smaller. She is pleading. Then I hear a thud. I press my eye against the peephole, and there he was. The boy was on the stairwell, with his knees close to his chest, rocking back and forth. Once again, he was pressing his hands over his ears, breathing frantically. His eyes were wide shut. Everything on his small body trembled. He wants to leave, but can't escape. I couldn't wait any longer, so I knocked on Eric's door. After a pause, Monica answered. A bruise bloomed across her cheekbone, fresh and raw, her eyes showing nothing but fear. "Are you all right?" I asked. She opened her mouth, then blurted, "He was just a kid." A few seconds later, Eric's shadow appears behind her. "What's going on here?" he yelled. "You tell me," I said, with my heart pumping out of my chest. "Why is your wife hurt? Why does she look terrified?" Eric's face hardened. "Mind your own business." Monica tried to stand between Eric and me. As her body was struggling to stand straight, she grabbed the edge of the doorframe, as if it might anchor her. As tears were running down her face, she whispered, "He's seen the boy." Eric froze, but snapped immediately afterwards. "That brat didn't know how to keep his mouth shut," he shouted. The words broke the heavy atmosphere that had been clinging in the air ever since I moved into this building. Monica sobbed openly now, clutching her stomach, her body folding inward, as though the truth itself had finally been ripped out. I stepped back, and I realized that the boy was a witness, a victim, a casualty. My head is spinning around in circles, I can't think straight. But Monica's pleas for help snap me out of the blur. I call the police. They arrive shortly after. While Monica is weeping and mumbling, I'm sorry, over and over, I see Eric struggling, shouting, and twisting as cuffs clamp his wrists. In the following weeks, I learn the truth in fragments. The no-name boy used to live in the building with his mother after his parents' divorce. One late night, he'd witnessed Eric striking Monica inside their apartment. The door was unlocked. While peeping through the crack, the boy had seen what he shouldn't, the violence, the secret Eric couldn't bear exposed. In a fit of rage, Eric had dragged him into the apartment. They fought, but Eric was stronger and slammed the boy against the wall. It was a fatal blow. His small skull cracked the plaster. The indentation remained, hidden behind a heavy oak dresser. The boy's body was disposed of far away. Officially, he was just another child who ran away after his parents' divorce. After years of uncertainty and silence regarding her child's disappearance, the mother moved somewhere else, to another city. Eric confessed that night, spitting hateful words even as they dragged him away. He should have minded his business, shouldn't have stuck his nose where it doesn't belong. But the boy had pride, and it had cost him everything. That evening, I sat for a long time on the stairwell. This time, it was me who was waiting for him. I wanted to tell him that I was sorry, that the world had failed him. He was just a kid, and didn't deserve any of it. Then, I feel a faint shift in the air pressure, a softness pressing against my skin. I looked behind, but there was no one. Ever since that day, he has not returned. Not once. For the first time since moving in, the stairwell was empty, and the silence did not feel oppressive. It felt, finally, like peace.